This is Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America. I'm your host, Gary Holt, and joining me is my trail partner and co-host, Tina Mae Weber. Tina, good morning.
Good morning, Gary.
We've got a lot of folks lined up on the show today, and it's going to be a great show. Can you tell us who will be joining us?
Absolutely. First, we have Randy Rasmussen of Backcountry Horsemen of America. And then we will talk with Renee Kozlowski, founder of Lope for Hope. Then travel to Rothbury, Michigan, and talk with Stephanie Alvarez, equestrian director at the Double J Resort.
All right, and Saddle Up America is made possible by our great sponsors at the General Store. You'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the equestrian lifestyle in the General Store on our website at equestrianlegacy.net. So grab a cup of coffee, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Randy Rasmussen.
I'm back in the saddle. Out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed off the lowly Jimson wheat. I'm back in the saddle again. I'm riding the range once more, and I'm toting my old 44, where you sleep out every night, and the only log is right. I'm back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-yi-ho, I'm rocking to and fro, back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-yi-hey, I go my own way, 'cause I'm back in the saddle.
Several times on our Thursday Campfire Cafe, but first time for Saddle Up America. And so, Randy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gary. Hi, Tina May.
Hi.
Glad to be here.
Oh, well, we're glad to have you. I think Tina May's had a lot more coffee than I have this morning. We're going to have to watch her volume today. but she'll be a lot of fun. And she has nothing to say about that.
Well, no. I have no control over the volume, Gary. That's you.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, we've got a lot to talk about during the show today. And, Randy, why don't you start out by introducing your position with Backcountry Horsemen of America and tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started with them.
Oh, you bet, Gary. Very quickly, the Backcountry Horseman of America is the nation's premier trail maintenance and service volunteer organization. We have over, I believe now, 29 states and 174 chapters throughout the U.S., and service work is first and foremost for the Backcountry Horseman. We have a national board, and a national board of directors, and chairman. Our chairman is Jim McGarvey from Georgia, wonderful gentleman, and I am the advisor for public lands and recreation to Chairman McGarvey and the executive committee of BCHA, and so I work on issues of national importance regarding public lands and recreation, be it bills in Congress, but more excitingly, kind of the things that are happening on the ground in our national forests, national parks, and other public lands, and how we can continue to ensure that we have access to public lands and that we're working with the agencies and other partners to enjoy the public lands to their fullest. So that's a kind of a snapshot of my role within the organization, but service is first and foremost among our mission.
Okay, and I always have trouble with your title. I mean, it's quite a title that you've got. So, but you do a great job with Backcountry Horsemen of America, and I know your service to that organization is invaluable. What's your background? How'd you get started with BCHA?
My background, how I got started. Well, I'll answer the second question first, Gary. How I got started was I was doing a similar role representing the quiet recreation community and hikers. And I was doing a lot of outreach to the Backcountry Horsemen of America because I thought they were so great. And working with folks like Dennis Daly and other people who, you know, we had so much in common. And over over time, it was clear we had so much in common. Dennis and other folks and former chairman Mike McGlenn from BCHA say, why don't you come work for us? And that was a really great invitation. And every reason, it made perfect sense. My family here owns horses, and we trail ride as well. It's a part of our lifestyle, and it was a great marriage. The background I can be brief on because I love to talk about issues and what we're doing. But in a nutshell, I have a master's degree in public lands and wilderness management from Colorado State University. I've been a forest ranger and a BLM river ranger in Colorado and elsewhere. I've lived in several western states and just love public lands. And I got involved in nonprofit groups years ago in advocating for protecting our public lands and, you know, for folks that are recreating to get out there and enjoy them and give back to their public lands. So I've had an exciting path to get to ultimately where we are now with BCHA, but I've worked with a number of nonprofit groups, including the Wilderness Society and others that really do a lot to protect our public lands. So the fit is really good. And the experiences I've had really fit in well with the role that I currently have as the advisor for public lands and recreation at BCHA.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty impressive background. Anytime that I talk to somebody with a master's, they're above my pay grade with their knowledge. So, hey, you know, there's a bill that is before Congress right now, H.R. 4886. And I think they call that the National Forest System Trails Stewardship Act. Tell us a little bit about what that is and what the importance is to trail users.
Thank you for mentioning it. This is a huge bill before Congress right now in the House of Representatives. This is really our bill. The Backcountry Horsemen of America, America Horse Council, and the Wilderness Society have worked together over several years to get to this point where Congress has introduced a bill much to our liking and pretty much what we've been asking for. Essentially, what we're asking for at this point is on the national forests that many of us love and enjoy and use. In fact, that's really the bulk of a lot of our service projects from BCHA, and a lot of our riding, be it backcountry or front country, is on the national forests. And we have, you know, over 155 national forests scattered throughout the United States, and there's been a problem for many years, as people have noticed, the deteriorating trail conditions, the lack of maintenance. A lot of this has to do with the funding that the agency is not getting like they used to. You know, Congress has truly not been doing their part to fund the federal land management agencies and the recreation programs that are important to the public, while the whole time recreation use is increasing. you know, in a big way. More people are getting out and enjoying their forests. So with decreasing dollars to the agencies, with increasing use comes more and more wear and tear on our trails and the need to maintain them, among other things like, you know, major forest fires or insect blowdown and a number of things that are killing trees and making it difficult to access our forests. So in a nutshell, the bill would start the process of what we're hoping will be a trend towards reversing the trail maintenance backlog on our national forests to get to a point where it's sustainable. And this bill specifically has provisions that would free up and focus more resources on the volunteer component of that, the BCHA-type groups that actually can do the work and do the service. We're finding that there's barriers sometimes to having qualified volunteers clear trails. We've had folks turned away sometimes from national forests that are ready to do the work, but there's a bureaucratic reason or two why they can't. This bill, the National Forest System Trail Stewardship Act that you mentioned, is a step in the right direction to allow volunteers to do more and help fill in some of that gap in trail maintenance. But it isn't going to be the end-all necessarily. There's still many other pieces that have to come together to make sure that our trails are ultimately sustainable.
Okay, and I also noticed that part of the highlights of this were to utilize our firefighters more, to have outfitters and guides engaged, and also to establish somewhere between 9 and 15 priority landscapes for increased trail maintenance. How does that actually fit into that?
Well, those are some of the steps, and you mentioned the use of firefighting crews. In the past, even when I used to work for the Forest Service, I had my red card and I was on the fire crew, but I also did trail work, too, as part of that mm-hmm. training. That doesn't happen in a lot of regions anymore. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but what we're asking in the bill, at least, is for the Forest Service to study the feasibility of and when the barriers and the opportunities to allow fire crews to, you know, do trail work as long as it, you know, doesn't deter from their mission of being able to fight fires, as long as it enhances their training abilities and is, you know, it makes sense. We're seeing collectively what can be done because some regions are doing it well and using fire crews to this date, like in the West Coast and California. Others mm-hmm. are not at all for various reasons. We want, you know, a broader look at where it's really feasible and if it can help fill some of those gaps. The other pieces you mentioned, some priority landscapes, we want the agency to focus and look at a number of landscapes across the nation to say these are priority areas and we can focus additional resources and energies on these with our partners and find ways to do this and show that it can be done, you know, if there's a real objective to do so and there's targets and milestones and things, and see how we can do that and then broaden that, hopefully, across the nation as those successes are shown. And then lastly, the outfitter and guides that you mentioned, Gary, another partner group that does a lot of, you know, trail-related work, and then sometimes they maintain trails both for their clientele and for the general public, depending on where you are. We're asking the Forest Service to look at ways to offset the fees they already pay as outfitters and guides for the privilege of guiding on the national forest. And if they do trail maintenance that serves the public good, why not reduce their fees at some level, you know, so that gives them an incentive as outfitter and guides to do more work on the national forest that helps other folks, and it helps, you know, in some way alleviate some of that trail maintenance backlog. So anything to get partners and other parties beyond just the agency folks and the volunteers like BCHA that have been around for some 40 years, what other people can we bring into the mix? What other resources can we do? Because we know the agencies just don't have enough resources to do the job right. So that's the intent, is to, you know, broaden the net here and bring in as many partners as possible.
Right. And Randy, how many miles of trails do we have in the system, and how many of those miles are actually in need of maintenance today?
Well, it's a good question. And last I heard, there were some 58,000 miles of Forest Service trails throughout our nation. And if you ask my chairman, Jim McGarvey, he'd say that's if you put them end on end, you could go around the circumference of the equator, you know, two or three times. That's a massive system of trails.
It really is.
I'm sure it exceeds our interstate, you know, highway system. So clearly there's trails that have just, you know, came up, and they used to be game trails or other things that evolved into trails that aren't sustainable. But a very important piece of our work is we had to have the data, just as you're saying here, is what are the numbers? We wanted to make sure we were talking about real numbers. So we members of Congress, including Cynthia Lummis from Wyoming and Mike Simpson from Idaho, requested from Congress 2 years ago a study. And that comes through the Government Accountability Office, the GAO. And last summer they issued a report that gave us the numbers that really help us make our case as to, you know, the state of the Forest Service trail system. So of those 58,000 miles that I mentioned, Gary, a full, you know, two-thirds are not maintained regularly. And a full third are just not maintained at all, really. And, you know, they give it breakdowns per mileage and in wilderness and non-wilderness, if I recall correctly. But the state of the system is it's in bad shape. And they identified a $320 million maintenance backlog alone.
Wow.
So just from all the years of neglect, they're already $320 million in the hole. And then there's additional funds and operations and things that they could be doing with trails that brings that total up to almost $500 million. And so these are real numbers, real dollars that we can point to. And then we have to find, of course, cost efficiencies. And that's why we're saying volunteers can do a portion of that work. We can do some things to alleviate that problem because the numbers are huge. But ultimately, it's going to require additional resources for the agencies and, you know, professional trail building staff, folks like we've seen in the past, that serve on our national forests and at the field level and all the way up to Washington, D.C. So it's not a great picture about our trails. It's somewhat dismal, but it's not insurmountable.
Right. And H.R. 4886 would go some good bit to help with that problem. Not everything, but it would certainly be a step in the right direction, wouldn't it?
It is. And I'll even say the last statistic from that GAO report said a quarter of the trail miles on our national forests aren't even up to agency standards for safety and erosion control and whatever. So if a quarter of our trails are either unsafe or eroding and causing other problems, we really need to do something, something soon.
Okay. And what is the status of this bill now?
The status of the bill is we have 23 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives, and they're from all walks and political stripes here, which is great because trails have to be bipartisan. They are bipartisan, and we're getting support from every area in Congress. And now we're seeking a Senate co-sponsors here. We have some hopes, but we have a lot of good support and a lot of positive dialogue. Chairman McGarvey and I were in Washington, D.C. week before last, speaking to members of Congress about this as part of the Wilderness Act 50th anniversary celebrations. And we got great reception to the bill that's in Congress. And if we don't get a lot of support and quick movement here, we certainly know that early in the next Congress next year, we can really hit this running and have lots of co-sponsors and get things moving forward, because we haven't seen any truly negative comments from members of Congress yet or hesitations to support a bill that gets people engaged in their forests, gets people outdoors, and, you know, and finds ways to do more, you know, with the federal agencies and not just asking for more money all the time, but how can we be part of that solution? How can we do it collectively across the nation? So I think it's getting a lot of momentum, and we certainly know in the next Congress that we'll have lots of partners. And I hopefully will report to you early next year our Senate co-sponsors and where those bills both are going.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Well, we want to take just a quick break, Randy. And I know that when we come back from this break, that Tina's got some questions about how trail riders can get involved with BCHA and the efforts going on. But while we take this break, I want to mention that we have a legacy club that was started as a thank you to our listeners, and the Legacy Club membership is free. You can go to our website, equestrianlegacy.net, and enroll in the Legacy Club. We've got great discounts from all of our Legacy Club sponsors, special offers just for Legacy Club members, and we also have some great giveaways. And when we come back, we have a weekly giveaway that we're starting to do, and so we'll announce the winner of that for this week in just a moment. But right now, let's listen to a song from Ken Lee, and it kind of takes us out into the backcountry. It's called Howling in the Night. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy's Saddle Up America, and we're talking with Randy Rasmussen.
Calling to me, shadows in the darkness running hauntingly, and the rustle of the wind, and the rustle of the pines, and the coyotes keep howling through the night. Sometimes I have to work all alone, out there in my saddle among sagebrush and stone. But they're out there in disguise, laughing through their eyes, and the coyotes keep howling through the night. Mama cows, keep those young ones by your side. Don't bed them down in places that the predators can find. From the elder cattlemen, and I'm calving out these cows, and I'm doing doctoring, but I'm thinking I might find just a little peace of mind if the coyotes would just quit howling through the night.
Night, and you get in the backcountry, you're going to hear a few of those coyotes out there. So great song by Ken. We want to let Tina May announce our winner this week for the drawing. And Tina May, tell us who that is.
Well, our Legacy Club winner this week is Teresa Elam from Tennessee. And she has won a Savvy Horse Highline Kit from Campus Horses. Congratulations, Teresa.
All right, so Teresa Elam, and I think Teresa's up in the Big South Fork of Tennessee. So she's the winner of the Savvy Highline Horse System from Camp with Horses. And we're visiting with Randy Rasmussen, and I think Tina May has some questions for you, Randy.
You bet.
Yes, I do. There's some questions that's been around with us, and I think, you know, this would be a great way for you to clear some minds as well. And I realize that Backcountry Horsemen of America is based on volunteers. But does the organization itself get funding from the government? And if so, how is that determined?
Okay, Tina May, does the organization get funding from the government? I don't believe so, certainly not in our operational budget from BCHA National. I mean, we do have memorandums of agreement with some of the federal agencies like the National Park Service and the U.S. Forest Service. Those don't include any monies. It's, you know, basically for our volunteer services and ways by which we can work more with local forests or national parks. There may be grants that we sometimes, our chapters might write collectively with a federal agency to get money to do a certain trail project. All the monies are used for the trails projects themselves. They don't fund staff or overhead or anything like of that nature. Does that help answer your question? I mean, we don't, as far as I know, receive funding from the government. All our funding is membership donations, memberships, you know, in terms of the fees and dues, and some, you know, private foundations that give us money.
Absolutely, and I think it might clear some confusion that might be out there. Also, on with our listeners, kind of explain, and you kind of talked a little bit about it with the HR 4886, but tell our listeners how the Backcountry Horseman is helping to keep our public lands to remain open to recreational stock use, the trail riders. You guys are out there, and you are fighting for us to keep these public lands open for us. And can you give us some examples in the different meetings and the things that you go to stand up and be our voice?
Oh, you bet, Tina May. I mean, there's some great examples right now. And our fall newsletter will outline, that'll be out to the public here in short order, we'll give some great examples of just how BCHA is working to keep public lands open for recreational stock use. That is one of our missions. Our mission statement includes, you know, you know, making sure that public lands remain open to recreational stock use. And the examples I'll give you are new. They're exciting because they have to do with national parks. And if all places that are most regulated, and we're seeing some declines, you know, in access for saddle and pack stock users, it's in national parks. But we report in our forthcoming newsletter some great examples where BCHA, myself and my executive committee and chairman have teamed up with our local chapters in southern Utah at Bryce Canyon National Park, in western Washington State at Olympic National Park, Yellowstone National Park, and lastly in Southern California with Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park. In each case, these, you know, we have cut our teeth and our reputation on the service work that we do. But we're also an advocacy organization, and sometimes we have to be firm with the agencies that we're not backing down, and we need to keep these trails open and accessible. Clearly, there are times where we have to, you know, work with the agencies and say, we know that there are problematic trails or campsites, and we want to do things either with our Leave No Trace education and the folks we have that are called master educators in Leave No Trace techniques, or other ways to do trail reroutes or education or things to mitigate some of the impacts we're seeing on the grounds that everyone causes, and not just horse and stock users, but if you have too many hikers, too many other folks, you're going to have problems, and we're seeing those in different parts of the nation. But where we've teamed with the local chapters of BCH is most important. So, again, going to Bryce Canyon National Park, there was a proposal to charge private stock users for the, you know, there's only 8 or 12 miles of trail available to us at Bryce Canyon National Park in southern Utah. But the proposal was that we'd have to hire a wrangler that's approved by the Park Service to essentially guide us the entire time we're there, and we had to pay fees going from $100 to $350 for that privilege, so to speak. Well, I can't say we came unglued, but we very much were professional, but very forceful in our opinions about this. Worked out a very constructive dialogue with the park staff at Bryce Canyon, and they were receptive to discussing this. And then with the local BCH chapter in Southern Utah, saying, we can help make this work. We can work with folks and create a pre-trip kind of briefing for, you know, the hazards, because there's very many steep trails and segments where you really can't pass other parties coming in the opposite direction. And we can work out a solution with our folks at the chapter level, as well as the folks at the national level like me pushing, you know, buttons in both in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere to say we're not going to stand for being regulated in this fashion. And with a receptive park superintendent like you have at Bryce, we came together and we have a success story where they rescinded their proposal. They're happy to work with our local chapter and detail some solutions that will get to the safety and the resource issues they were most concerned about. And in the end, we don't have to pay to have a wrangler shadow us the entire time we're at Bryce Canyon National Park. That would have set a terrible precedent nationally, and we didn't want that precedent to go further. So that's one example, Tina May, and I can give you lots of more.
I think that's great work. So Backcountry Horsemen works with other groups and makes it a group effort, and you're our voice for the trail riders to stand up for our rights. How can the trail riders work with Backcountry Horsemen in an effort to work with the National Park Service?
Oh, you bet. No, thanks, Tina May. This is an important question of how we work, because we have so many people in so many states, you know, and have extensive knowledge and relationships. The best way to work with, you know, BCH, and this is, I'll say collectively, Backcountry Horsemen, because there's several tiers, and that's how we have our strength. So we have our chapters that are local, let's say the folks at Mammoth Cave National Park in Kentucky, and then there's a state organization. And what I would recommend for folks to do, if they have either they see some opportunities where, hey, there's some trails we could actually build at Mammoth Cave National Park, would they be receptive? Certainly speak to the state BCH organization. And so in that case, it would be Tennessee. And if it has national implications, or even they want some problem or help troubleshooting, how do we work with the National Park Service? Is the superintendent have authority or ultimate authority? Do we have to go elsewhere? That's where BCHA, the national, can be brought in for some advice, strategic guidance, even some, you know, connections or some other people we might steer them towards. But the strength is in the grassroots, the people that know the parks or the national forest best, and a lot of these issues are worked out very well at the state level, and we have a great lines of communications now that Chairman McGarvey's put in place of how we tap into that, and we're working and having, you know, monthly calls with all the states to know what's happening in their backyards, what issues should we be aware of at the national level, and how can we help out with issues that they're dealing with at the local level. So it's really kind of working those systems of, there's always a public lands person usually in each chapter of BCH. In the chapter, I mean the local group that might be part of the state or all of the state. And at the state level, there's usually always a public lands person. And so at the national level, that's me. And we have ways of communicating and just, you know, saying, how can we leverage, you know, both our strengths and our knowledge here and make sure that we keep trails open, you know, for recreational stock use. That's really why I exist in this organization, and I absolutely love the kind of work, because we're making great headway. And granted, we have some challenges, but it's when we put our heads together with the local chapters in the states is where we make the most headway and build the best relationships.
Well, Randy, you're always very informative, bring us great information. Tina May, those were great questions that you had. And we've run out of time for this segment, but Randy, before we leave you, can you tell us the website for Backcountry Horsemen? And I guess they can become members of their local chapters and the national organization from that website. But what's the website address?
That's correct. It's www.backcountryhorse.com.
Okay.
Backcountryhorse.com is the website.
All right, backcountryhorse.com. It's a great website. It had a redo this year, and it looks great. Great information there. And Randy, have to thank you for taking the time to join us. I know it was short notice. Jim was going to be with us, but always, always love having you join us with your knowledge and information that you share.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you
so much, Gary. Tina May, take care. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
So that's Randy Rasmussen with Backcountry Horsemen of America. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Renee Kozlowski with Lope for Hope. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America. Joining us on our show now, Renee Kozlowski with Lope for Hope. Renee, welcome to the show.
Hi, Renee.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Good to have you with us. We appreciate you being with us. I've got a couple of different phone lines with the same number, so I'm not sure who's who here. But anyway, appreciate you being with us. And first of all, let me say that our prayers go out to your son. I know that he had some health challenges just recently, and so thanks for joining us with that. And we wish him well.
Well, thank you so much, and we have good news on that. He is now, they let him out of the hospital today, so that is, I just thank God that everything is okay. He's got a few things he's going to have to take care of, like overworking, but other than that, thank God.
Well, we appreciate that, and our prayers go out to him and to the family and for his full recovery on that. But tell us a little bit about how you became started, how Lope for Hope came about.
Well, 7 years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I had a lumpectomy on my birthday, which is November 15th. And while I was going through cancer treatment myself, I just sat there and I watched the people that were in those treatment rooms the same time I was in those treatment rooms. And it was really noticeable, the lack of money, the lack of transportation, childcare, the everything. So while I was sitting there in that chair, my first love is, of course, my family, and then comes horses. So as I was going through treatment, the idea of Lope for Hope became a reality. And it took me a couple years after that time frame to really pull off the whole concept and put the whole thing together, but that's where it came from. And also 13 years ago, my sister lost her daughter to breast cancer, diagnosed at the age of 24, and she died before she turned 27. So it kind of just, everything just kind of came together.
Well, and what does Lope for Hope do?
Well, Lope for Hope is actually the name of our website because it has a ring to it. It's lopeforhope.com. Pink Horse, Inc. is the name of our 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we fundraise for cowgirls going through cancer treatment.
Okay, and I think
and
Tina May has... Yeah, Tina May's
got
an event that she's going to attend.
Coming up, and it's the second annual Lope for Hope ride this Saturday, October 11th. Tell us some about your ride, how much cost the donation, and the activities and everything that's involved there, and then we'll talk about your plans for these rides.
Well, this year is our second annual ride. Last year, we were just really surprised at the amount of people who showed up for our first ride. We had over 140 horses. And last year, we had we went on our trail ride. We had a pig roast. We had a silent auction. We ran speed. And then we had actually had a professionally judged trail course. So there was a lot that went into it. You didn't necessarily have to have a horse to show up there, and you sure don't this year to join in on what we're going to do there. The cost of the ride this year is $40, and that is donated directly to Lope for Hope. And we have several sponsors that have stepped up to the plate that have sponsored T-shirts, the dinner, even the Portage on rental. It's just really overwhelming. And the part of the trail ride is it is a sea of pink that is just riding through the woods.
Awesome, awesome. And how long is this trail ride?
I think this year we're going to be like on a 3 or 3.5 hour trail ride, and anybody can go on this trail ride. It's not a hard trail ride, but the fall colors up here right now in Michigan are spectacular. So it's going to be a really pretty ride. The weather looks favorable right on through the weekend, so we're looking for sunny skies, and probably 50 degrees, somewhere in there. So you're going to have to dress a little bit warmer.
Okay. All right. And with this ride, this is going to be at the Double J Resort?
That's correct, in Rothbury. and they have a full facility there. They have hotels, camping, they have cottages, and they have an indoor water park where you, if you stay at the hotel, you can participate in the water park. It's a great facility. They also have a really nice restaurant, and we stayed there last year at the Trail Ride, and we're going to stay there again this year and look forward to just getting back there with all our friends that we met last year.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a great event, and can you tell us what the dates are again for that?
That is this Saturday, October 11th. And I believe the Trail Ride starts at noon. But, you know, I'd suggest everybody get there.
Okay.
At 10 o'clock in the morning, and we get everything all set up and ready to go. And there's horses to rent there, too. I have rented horses for my staff that is participating. And but we're also going to have our full we have a 30-foot travel, or not a travel trailer, but a 30-foot trailer that we bring with us, and we sell out of it, so there'll be a lot of Lope for Hope product available at the Trail Ride.
All right. Okay. Well,
and you're going to have entertainment as well, am I correct?
Oh, yeah, there is. I forgot about that. We didn't have that last year. That's going to be really cool because we're going to have, now the Double J is doing the buffet-type meal that we're having. And but then after that, we do have entertainment and refreshments, so it's really going to be a good time.
Well, it sounds like a great event, and Tina May, I know, plans on showing up for that. And so that's this weekend at the Double J in Michigan, Roxbury, Michigan. And we have, on the next segment of our show, joining us, Stephanie Alvarez from Double J Resort, and she's going to tell us more about that facility and the events that they have there. And Renee, would you come back and join us again for another show?
Absolutely. I thank you so much. I've met a lot of cool people right through social media, directly through Tina May, and we just look forward to a good relationship coming down the road.
Well, we look
forward to
having you back again.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Stephanie Alvarez at Double J Resort in Roxbury, Michigan. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America.
Saddle blanket. I'd never trade it after all that we've been through. And sometimes I still get scared, but my blanket's always there. Made 100 years ago by the hands of the Navajo, sold by some old trader on the side of a dusty road. It still holds the hair of many a pretty pony.
That's Joni Harms' Saddle Blanket, and we're joined by Stephanie Alvarez from the Double J Resort in Rothbury, Michigan. And Stephanie, I guess there'll be a few wet saddle blankets up there this weekend. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I hope not. it's supposed to be a nice weekend, so, well, fingers crossed.
All right. Well, we're really tickled to have you join us, and you're going to have a great event up there, but tell us a little bit about Double J Resort and how that got started, because that's been there for a year or two, hasn't it?
It's been here for a couple of years, just a few. It was actually established in 1937 as a singles camp, and as years progressed and, you know, singles were meeting here and then they wanted to keep coming back after they had gotten married and then families were formed, they had made some changes over the years to go from just the original ranch part to a golf course, Sundance Steakhouse, which is our main restaurant. Then you've got the Back 40, which is our family and kids area, where a lot of our riding activities happen. And then we also then, in about 7-8 years ago, we built the indoor water park. And so that's up at the golf course area as well. So no matter what time of year it is, there's always something to do. So.
Well, it sounds like a great facility there, and I know that Tina May is really curious and has some questions because she's going to be joining you up there. So, Tina May, why don't you ask those pertinent things that you want to know about?
Oh, you bet. I do think it's pretty neat that Double J is kind of unique, that it has all these different sections for these different activities. That's great for the non-horse person while the horse person likes to ride. But tell us about the horse area, the camping, and how many miles of trail you have.
Our horse area is we have 100 head of horses on property, and we mostly do guided trail rides. They can be 1 hour, they can be 2 hour, they can be 3 hour. But that's what a big bulk of what we do is. But we do have 25 miles of trails on the property itself. We're spread out about 1,800 acres or so. And the majority of our trails actually go through our golf course. The trails obviously have been here longer because we started off as a ranch earlier than a golf course. And when the golf course was designed by Arthur Hills, he had tried to preserve as many of the trails as he could. So one of the things that makes us unique is that on the golf course itself, the horses actually have right-of-way on the cart paths because a lot of our trails will cross the paths themselves, and so the golfers let us go across, and then they carry on about their way for the rest of their game. But like I said, we've got about 25 miles of trails. We are centrally, in my opinion, located. We're an hour from Grand Rapids, from Holland, from Ludington. Manistee National Forest isn't very far from us, maybe about 20-30 minute drive, depending on where you wanted to join up on trails. So I love the location that we've got. The horse area, you know, we've got our 25 miles of trails, and we do the guided rides, but we also do, in the summer months,
from Memorial Day to Labor Day, we do a weekly rodeo. So we have Buckinee Rodeo Productions brings their stock in and a couple of their cowboys and cowgirls, and we do rodeos every night, or not every night, excuse me, every Saturday night. And so we've got those guys coming in, and, you know, it's an open show, so, you know, anyone can run barrels. Every once in a while you'll see some of the wranglers out there doing barrels or roping, and it kind of gets them more involved in the rodeo. And then we do some guest interaction games. There's one that's called Calf Scramble, where you got to get the ribbon off the calf's tail, and the one with the picks the winning ribbon wins. And then there's some other games too. So it's we try to get everyone involved in one way or the other, whether it's riding or participating in the rodeo. We do riding for people of all ages. If you've got your own horse, bring them out. If you don't, you know, we've got plenty of horses, all different shapes, sizes, colors, breeds, everything you want. We've pretty much got it. And so we also do lessons, too, for people that are coming up just for a one night or two night, and they're not 100% comfortable on a horse and they want to better their skills, they can do lessons with us, too. So got a little bit of something for everybody.
So you have an arena there so that people can go in and practice their horses or work on some things and mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Yep, in the back 40 portion, which is the main hub of everything in the summer months, we've got a small, it's probably about 150 by 200 corral that we use for our lessons. And then after our lessons, it's open to anyone that wants to come in and ride on their own horse, or if they have a lesson with us, we'll use that arena. And then we've also got our rodeo arena, which is about 250 by 300 feet, something along those lines, that, you know, you're more than welcome to go in and ride in as well.
Okay. But if somebody was to come to bring their horse for themselves, the camping area that is for them, that is primitive, correct?
Yep, we're working on the final details of getting a set area for those that want to bring their horse and camp with them right off the trailer or in a temporary pen. So we're working on those final details. But until those are figured out, we have a boarding facility with runouts or small paddocks that you can rent while you're here and then either camp or stay in one of the cabins or one of the hotel rooms. Whatever kind of tickles your fancy as far as where you want to be. And from the back 40, it's maybe a half mile to the boarding barn. So most of the guests that bring their horses.
Sure.
Sorry?
Okay. But you had mentioned that you got 25 miles of trails. How are the trails and what kind of terrain do you have? And they can ride to the lake too, am I correct?
Yep, there is a way to get to the lake. We've got a couple different routes, and there's a couple access points to Lake Michigan itself. I believe the last time we rode it was about a 2 to 3 hour ride, depending on the trail that you took. So we can always get anyone that wants to come this way, we can get them a route to Lake Michigan. But as far as the property trails, they are mostly sandy trails. All of our horses are barefoot, and a lot of the guests that bring their horses up, they're all barefoot as well. It's mostly sandy, a couple of hills. As you're in the golf course more, there can be some challenging points, but for the most part, it's all fairly beginner, intermediate, rider safe. So.
Okay. All right. That's good enough. Tell us you've got an upcoming event coming up. Want to tell us a little bit about that with the Lope for Hope ride that's being held there this Saturday?
Yeah, Lope for Hope, this is their second year riding here, and their numbers from last year to this year have grown, and it's great to see the amount of horses that come in for this. Like Renee said earlier, it's just a sea of pink going down the trails. It's just a sight. Lots of horses, lots of people, great people. The food after the ride, and then they've got the evening entertainment. And we've offered some of our own horses up for rent. Like if there's people that want to do the ride and want to be a part of it, but they don't have their own horses, we've rented some of our own horses out for the event so that they can participate in it, so that you don't have to be a horse owner or know someone with a horse to participate and help raise money for the cause.
Oh, no, that's awesome. Now, how much would that cost for them to rent a horse?
It's $75 for the ride, and it's about 3 to 4 hours of a ride. I think mileage-wise, it was probably about 12 miles the last I knew, and they were still finalizing the exact route. So.
Okay, great. All right, well, I'm excited to come up there and see your place and meet everybody and participate in such a great cause there with the Lopers and Lope for Hope. There. Do you know what's on the menu for the dinner?
I believe it's barbecue chicken with some amazing cornbread and sweet potatoes, and then a surprise dessert. I'm not really sure what the chef has in mind, but he's never disappointed.
Oh, that is awesome. And go ahead, Gary.
Well, no, I was just going to say it's a pretty amazing facility up there, and in addition to the back 40 for the horses there, tell us about your hotel rooms, your condos, your cabins, because you've got quite a variety of options for people to stay.
We do. We've got no matter what your choice is or where you prefer to stay, we've got everything from full condominiums, townhomes, to rustic primitive camping. All but the camping is open year-round, and we're a year-round resort, so no matter what time of year, you can stay in the log homes at the back 40 or the family cabins. Those sleep anywhere from 2 to 10 people, depending on the unit that you're looking at. And then up at the Frontier, where the water park and golf course is, we've got the lofts, which are our standard hotel rooms, and then we have the Thoroughbred Suites, which are the newest accommodations. And those are anything from a standard hotel room to a 2 or 3 bedroom suite. So a little bit of something for everybody, no matter what you're looking for.
Well, it sounds like a great, great facility for people to come to. I know a lot of times when people are going to trail rides, you'll have and this sounds terrible, but you have the ladies love to get out and ride, and the guys are looking for something else to do. So you've got the golf course for the fellas. You've got the water park for the entire family to participate in. And in addition to those amenities, you have got more than one restaurant, don't you?
We do, yep. Our main restaurant is the Sundance, which is our steakhouse. And then inside the water park building, we have Rustler's Roost, which is like your burgers and your pizza. And the summer months is our Shooter's Bar and Saloon is open. And that has like your fried chicken and more Western style foods. And then each one of the pools has its little outlet as well. So for a quick grab and go if needed.
All right, and then you told me something very interesting about some of the concerts that you do. There was something that's called the Electric Forest Festival, and tell us about that.
Yep, the Electric Forest Festival. It happens on the last weekend, the last full weekend in June, and what it is they rent out the entire property, and it turns into just a sea of people, and they transform one of the forests that is 70-plus years old. They turn it into just this amazing light show with crafts and artwork everywhere. And all the artwork is stuff that they've taken from, like, scrap piles, or it's all pallets, scrap metal, stuff like that. And they've just transformed it into just beautiful pieces of artwork. And then they obviously, like, that's where I mainly go, is I look at all the artwork that they've done. But the big draw is obviously the music, different electronic DJs and groups like that. They come and perform, and it's a 4-day festival, and it's pretty impressive. It's pretty cool.
How many years, Stephanie?
Well, when I come up there, I am really looking forward to meeting Wally. Can you kind of tell our listeners about Wally and about that forest?
Well, Wally, he is our resident historian, cowboy, man that knows everything. He actually helped plant the forest back when it was being planted, and he worked here when he was younger, And he still works here to this day. He's been here through any type of ownership change that we've had. And, I mean, you when you come here, you know exactly who Wally is when you see him walking down the street. So he's a great man. If you ever get a chance to stop him, he will tell you stories of this place that I don't even know about. And I've been here for 12 years working here. And I started off as a guest 5 years before that. So almost 20 years at the Double J, whether it's working or guest. But, yeah, it's a bug I've been bitten by, and it happens, and it's a great place to be.
That's great. And tell me about the bowl that I'm going to be on.
The bowl. We've got two of them. There's our mechanical bowl that we bring out on Saturdays and Sundays for rides, and then we also have Muggsy, who is our friendly bull. He's about 2,000 pounds, and he is just the most giant puppy I've ever met. He'll jump in your lap. This is his favorite time of year because of all the pumpkins and the corn. And so if you want to get on his good side, bring him an ear of corn, and he'll take it right out of your hand quicker than you can open your hand to give it to him. So he's a sweetheart. Kids and adults alike will sit on him, and it's not too many places have a bull that you can ride for more than 8 seconds.
Oh, gosh. Well, it sounds like a great facility up there, Stephanie. And in addition to the Lope for Hope fundraiser that's taking place, what else is coming up at Double J?
Coming up next weekend after the Lope for Hope, so 2 weekends from now, we've got a group of farriers in the state of Michigan that are coming in. They're going to be doing a blacksmith farrier demo, and we're going to try to, by next year, have an actual blacksmithing competition out here. So that's our goal for next year. And after that, we've got a 5K run. It's on the 25th of October. And it goes through, it starts at one end of the property, and it goes to the other. It goes through the golf course, through Sherwood Forest, which is where the concerts happen, and then through the back 40. So you run through all three areas of the property. And it's 5K trail run, so you're running on the horse trails, you're running on part of the golf course. So it'll be fun. It's a nice route, and with the colors changing, it's just going to be beautiful. It's going to be beautiful.
Well, and then I believe that you told me that, weather permitting, that you had horse sleigh rides.
We do. Yeah. For as much as I love sleigh rides, I'm hoping it doesn't start snowing till December. But it is Michigan, so you never know. But, yeah, when the snow flies and we've got enough snow on the ground, we'll start doing our horse-drawn sleigh rides. We've got two teams, Bonnie and Clyde, our half-sister Clydesdales. And then we've got Thelma and Louise, which are half-sister Percherons. So those girls will work all winter long doing sleigh rides. And then if you're not in the mood for a sleigh ride, but you're still looking for something fun to do in the snow, we also have a tubing hill up at the Frontier area. And we've got I can't remember exactly how long it is anymore, just because we've redone the path that the tubing hill takes. But we've got a tow rope that'll bring you back up the top, so you don't even have to walk back up. So that's the perk right there, is you can sit on your bottom going down and sit on your bottom going up.
Oh, that's great. Well, you've got activities year round at a great facility there in Rothbury, Michigan. And can you give us the website?
The website is www.doublejj.com. The word double is spelled out. 2js.com.
Okay. All right, and then you have a Facebook page as well?
Yep, Double JJ Resort is our Facebook page.
All right. Well, I would encourage people to visit the website and go and like their Facebook page. And Stephanie, how many horses did you tell me you take care of there?
We have 100 that are owned here, and then we've also got about another 20 or so that are personally owned horses that are boarded here.
Well, so your days are never busy, are they?
Oh, no, not at all. I got a lot of downtime.
Oh, goodness. Well, it sounds like a great facility, and we'd encourage people to participate in the Lope for Hope ride this weekend. Visit the website and also their Facebook page, and something for the entire family year-round at the Double J Resort in Rothbury, Michigan. And Stephanie, thanks so much for sharing that information with us and joining us on Saddle Up America today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Stephanie. Looking forward to meeting you.
Yep. We'll see you this weekend.
Okie dokie.
All right. Bye-bye, Stephanie.
See ya.
All right. Well, Tina May, you sound like you're going to have a big time again this weekend.
Oh, you bet. I'm ready. Okay. I'm ready to have a good time.
All right. So is Mocha ready?
You know what? I think I might take Nugget.
Well, Nugget probably would enjoy a change of scenery a little bit. So you did a pretty big ride recently, didn't you? What was that?
That was a St. Jude's charity ride in Alamo, Tennessee, called the Butt Creek Trail Ride, and it was awesome. And they raised over $91,000 for those children. I think it's fantastic. They put it, the crew did a wonderful job. It's an annual event at Terry Weaver's Farm, and I highly recommend people to put that on their calendar.
Well, from Tennessee to Michigan in just a couple of weeks, you're getting out and enjoying these trails with this beautiful fall weather that's rolling in. And, you know, we're going to expect a report back from the Lope for Hope ride next week on the show.
Absolutely. And pictures, too. I'll share pictures on the page.
Yeah, we'll share some pictures. We'd love to see those as well. So who do we have joining us next week?
Well, next week we've got Robert Eversall, the Trailmeister, and traveled to Black, Missouri with Joanne Becker, owner of Brushy Creek Lodge and Resort. And we will announce another weekly Legacy Club member winner.
Okay, well, it's going to be a great show next week with Robert, and Joanne is such a sweetheart, so we look forward to having her on the show. And then this Thursday on the Equestrian Legacy Radio's Campfire Cafe, we have an encore show with Belinda Gale and Susanna Gibson, the publisher and owner of Trailblazer Magazine. So that's this Thursday at noon Central Time on Equestrian Legacy Radio's Campfire Cafe. And then we're really excited to announce a new show that begins on Sunday, October the 12th. And that's Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale. And Belinda is a 7-time Western Music Association Female Performer of the Year, a very, very, very talented lady. And we're happy to welcome Belinda to the Equestrian Legacy Radio family. So we would encourage you to tune in on Sunday at 9 a.m. Central Time for Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale. And her first show for her first guest. For the premiere show will be R.W. Hampton. So R.W. is a great friend of ours, terrific musician and writer, and so he'll be joining Belinda for Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale this Sunday at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. Tina, any final thoughts you'd like to share?
Absolutely. I want to tell people to jump on to equestrianlegacy.net, join our Legacy Club membership, start enjoying the discounts to our sponsors, to our Legacy Club sponsors, and you're automatically entered into all our drawings, including the drawing for the end of the year for a 2-horse hydro horse system, which is a wonderful watering system for your trailer, especially if you're traveling. So I would really encourage people to join that, and also come on out, come to the Lope for Hope ride in Michigan, and support a really good cause.
All right. Well, we'd encourage folks to do that. And, again, you can visit equestrianlegacy.net and enroll in our free Legacy Club. This month, our big drawing is going to be for a great gift from Showtime Trailers. And so plenty of time to get enrolled for that, as well as for our weekly giveaways. So visit equestrianlegacy.net to do that. And we like people to like us. Go to our Facebook page at Equestrian Legacy Radio and give us a like. So we'd encourage you to do that. So it's been a fun show, Tina May. I envy you being up in Michigan at Double J this weekend. So that's going to be a great event. And we look forward to hearing about that next week, and also talking with Robert and Joanne, and that will be at noon Central Time on Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America. And we thank you for listening, and we remind you, as always, if you climb in the saddle,
get ready for the ride.
Get ready for the ride. So we're going to close the show today with a great song from Belinda Gale, and that's Granite Mountain. Thanks for listening, and join us next Tuesday at noon on Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America.
Rises up from the valley floor, covered with rocks and so much more, lurk between the junipers and boulders. Mountain lion, prickly pear, there is danger, be aware. And don't forget to look back over your shoulder.
Watch eagle fly, be mindful of the danger.